Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by. Well, it is Thursday, and on my program agenda today, I have been sitting on a story that came to me via social media better than a week ago. And I've read it twice. And every time I read it, I have the realization that as much as this story gives me, an ache in my stomach and in my heart and in my brain, I realize that it's incredibly prevalent, that it happens probably behind closed doors more often than any of us will ever know. And having been the kind of person who has spent their life interested in people, available for a lot of different people, I know that these stories are out there everywhere. And everybody deals with their personal situations in a different way. Some people are fighters. Some people are just victims and kind of immerse themselves in their problems and deal with it, work with it. Everybody's different. Also, the evaluation of what you believe your life is about and what it has become is important in this as well. If you grow up in a family where some things are commonplace and acceptable, you literally make them acceptable for you, which hurts my, I don't know, not just my feelings, but the word ethical, the word understandable, the words appropriate, the words normal, all those kind of words come into play in a situation like this. And every day we see more and more. Every morning when I turn on the Today Show, I see more stuff that's come to light, more stuff that's come to the attention of the media. So, you know, it's like starts out this little seed, and by the end of the day, it's a banyan tree. So it is what it is. But at the crux of all these different problems, there are individual people who are amidst this suffering. They are in the center of these issues. And when they turn for help, if they turn for help, the help comes in various forms. And I question whether or not some of the help is appropriate. I read stories every day where kids get taken away from moms because the living situation is horrible. Instead of stepping in and helping them, instead of making sure that they have food, electricity, water, diapers, all of those kind of things, they just remove the children. Do I understand that it's the responsibility of parents at large? Of course I do. But I question our handling, I guess, of all these stories. Most recently, of course, you'll remember several weeks ago, the Michael Brown case, where the young man was shot by a policeman. And the stories in the very beginning was that he got shot in his hand because he had his hands up in the air trying to get the cop to not shoot him. And even at my age, knowing all the things I know reading all the stories I've read, collecting all the information I've collected, my instinct was to believe Michael Brown. And now I find out that Michael Brown was indeed trying to do what the policeman said he did. He tried to climb in his car. He tried to take his gun away from him. Do you know how many repercussions were caused by the reporting of that horrible accident? Well, that horrible encounter was no accident, I guess. More people were hurt. More people were incarcerated. More bad things were said. We almost had another race riot, for God's sakes. And again, was this really about race? No. It was more or less about fear. Fear. And let me tell you something. Do any of us really know how we will react if we fear for our lives or for the lives of our loved ones? I don't think we do until we're there. We make the assumption that we'll fight to the death, and that in a lot of cases is true, but not always. Everybody's different, and everybody reacts in a different way. Now, the story I'm going to share today is about a woman who is surviving, has survived, but it's still about bullying at its, well, if not its highest level, close to its highest level. And I want to make a note again to say to everybody, even though when Shelley and I first started doing this show, we talked about bullying in the schools, we took a stand against kids being mean to other kids. We still talk about it every week. But what I find to be, I don't know, not surprising. I wish it was more surprising. It's not. But it is unbelievable how many times bullying of so many of these problems. So, I'm going to bring Shell in, and then I'm going to introduce this story. It is on my Facebook page. It is on Renee's Heart to Heart page. If any of you would like to read it later in the day, maybe it will help you make some changes in your own life. Good morning, Shell.
Good morning, Renee.
How are you, honey?
I'm doing pretty good. And you?
I'm good. It was a really rainy night again, huh?
I know. It's getting cooler at least, though. And so that's some benefit to all of it. My grass is really green.
mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you know, sometimes when it's in the middle of the summer and it rains, it just wells up with humidity and you feel like you can't breathe. But it's actually cooling things off where it's almost getting nippy for us, which is refreshing. This is the time of year that it's really, really beautiful in Florida because you still have the warm days, but then the nights are cooler and you get some relief from the heat.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that true? That is the truth about Florida. Of course, personally, I've lived in upstate New York and Florida, one place or the other. I've never lived anyplace else. There are still things about Ithaca, New York that I find beautiful, charming. The waterfalls, the fall colors, this time of year is beautiful in upstate New York. But I would never live any place but Florida.
Yeah.
I've seen a few places in our travels, some beautiful places in the Carolinas, in Tennessee, if I were Donald Trump, I'd have a few houses all over the world, probably, just to enjoy the special parts of those parts of the world. But I believe that Florida, and I've never been to California, so many times when I say this to Californians, you get into a bit of an argument because they have a beautiful state as well. And, well, everybody has a beautiful state, but I like water. I like warm weather. I'm not a snow bunny by any stretch of the imagination, and I'm too old to ice skate and toboggan ride, so those things are out now.
There you go. Yeah,
and that's what kept me there before.
I grew up out on Long Island, though. But still in New York, and the winters were absolutely bitter. But there were times, like you said, it was beautiful, you know, when it was snowing, when it first snowed, you know, before it got all sloppy from the road cleaners and stuff. But in the first snows, I remember, they were just magical. When the leaves would start falling, you could smell that Christmas in the air. The air was different. The minute fall set in, the air just smelled different and felt different. And it was almost like, I know spring is supposed to be a rebirth, but for me, fall was always a very magical time of the year for me. I just loved the feel of it, you know, when you started getting that first cool, crisp air coming in and you watched all the colors come up. It was, to this day, it's still a very magical time for me. And even though we don't see the leaves changing colors here, whenever we have that coolness in the air, because we're very sensory people and a lot of our memories are attached to sensory things.
Oh, taste. Yes. Isn't that the truth? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here I've been in Florida since 1998, and yet whenever I smell that cool, crisp air, it takes me back to those fall days on Long Island. It's quite remarkable how our memories work.
Well, I have so many people who have asked this question, and I've discussed this in many different arenas. If you had to live without one of your senses, what would be the hardest for you to not have? And, of course, most people say sight. And I guess that would be, just for the sense of survival, that is probably one of your most important senses. But you're right about smells, because smells, quicker than visual things, can give you instant recall, I think. Instant
True.
Recall
very, very.
Of something that was wonderful and beautiful. And, you know, for me, fall was, exhilarating. Exhilarating after a long summer in upstate New York. And then spring is like a sigh of relief, because winters are hard, you know. And having worked in restaurants, being a waitress or a bartender or something most of my younger days, people get like village idiots. They're so giddy. They are so giddy. It's funny. The minute a crocus peeps out from the frozen ground, everybody's walking around with their jacket unbuttoned, and it could still be 40 degrees outside, but they're walking around with their jacket unbuttoned, you know, sunglasses on. It's hysterical. It's hysterical. And here we do the opposite. We get weather like this here, the cooler, breezier days and everything, and you see everybody out with boots on. That just is hysterical as well. Boots and wraps around their necks, and, you know, and here we go. And it's still going to reach 80 today, but that's how everybody dresses when they leave in the morning. It is funny. It is funny. So, well, I'm glad we had this little chat, because what I'm going to share today is disheartening. And I put it off for 2 weeks because there was so many other things going on, and we've talked about so many great stories. But this one I left on my page, and I've read it two or three times. And, of course, you and I have talked to people who have lived this firsthand. And we've seen many movies. There's been many movies about spousal abuse, family abuse, and in lots of different ways, shapes, and forms. And ironically, in the middle of the night, I woke up and couldn't go back to sleep. So I watched an old cold case, which is the team of experts, policemen, if you will, that reopen cold cases, especially if a family member comes to them, and many times they're years and years later. And ironically, go ahead.
The documentary show or the TV weekly show?
The TV weekly show with Lily Rush and
I used to watch that. I love that. There's a real one now called Justice, which is real life. cold cases.
Yes. I've seen that one too. I enjoyed that one too. Well, I like seeing justice. I like seeing people be able to close a part of their life that wasn't good, and justice brings that about. But last night's show opening was a woman suffering from Alzheimer's who has been caught wandering and gets put in a holding tank. And Lily Rush, for one reason or another, is there, sees her, gets interested, and checks into the story. And it appears as though the man, the husband, was killed many years before. And it looks like he was killed on a strip in town that was known for being a prostitute stroll. And so everybody, you know, he's the bad guy from the get-go, you know. So they do the flashbacks, which I always enjoy because there's always the old music and the old things that were going on back in those days, which I find to be amusing, realizing the differences between then and now. And it ends up being the mom was the crazy one. And the mom is the one who killed the father. And the mom, for years, the two kids, a son and a daughter, and the father, lived in fear of this mom. She would drink. She would hit them with things. She would beat on them. She would literally go crazy. And when she was okay, you know, I mean, they don't go into what was wrong with her back in the day, but obviously she had maybe even schizophrenic tendencies, whatever. But she is the one who killed the husband. And when Lily goes to the house, she finds a bedroom door that has bolts and locks and locks and bolts all over it. As the story opens up, you find out that, and then the son, the young son who had to help take care of his father's body when he realized what his mother had done, hides that all of his life and ends up taking care of his mother because he feels like he has to. And kind of a sad story, but I thought to myself, isn't that funny? And I'm going to read tomorrow about a woman who lives a life of abuse like that. And then here's a whole family, kind of a turnaround. You know, here's a whole family that is lives in fear of a woman who flips. You know, and you read stories like this a lot as well. So let me read this because it's a little bit long, and I want to be able to discuss it. It is, you know, a couple weeks ago was standing in solidarity for domestic abuse, and everybody in New York City was wearing purple, and other states as well, other cities as well. But this one, this lady, her name is Teresa, and she is from New York City. And it's this is in a list of true stories of my life in a domestic memoir. I'm a Christian getting ready to, I don't know why my family doesn't remember I'm on the radio this time of morning. I am a Christian getting ready to end so many things in my life that were not right. I was still a baby in the faith. I meet this man who went to church, ate with me, did ministry with me, wanted to marry me, so he said. Eventually, him and I got an apartment together. No, I did not marry him, but he promised he would make it right with God. So one day, I get into a fight with him over his phone. He had something to hide and wouldn't let me see. Text messages, I don't know, something like that, because he got me on the floor with his fist up in the air ready to hit me. He never hit me because I got away. But at that point, I retaliated because I made a choice no man was ever going to physically hurt me. Feelings of rage, of betrayal, of fear, and the fact he threatened me with his fist made my character spin out of control. So I went into the kitchen, got a knife while he lay on the floor thinking it was finished, the fight. I stood over him with the knife and just said, if you ever think of hitting me or hurting me again in any way, I will kill you. Then threw the knife as if I was going to throw it at him, but I threw it in the opposite direction. I just wanted to scare him and protect myself. So I lived with him for 3 months. We went to church together, ate together. There seemed to be no problem. When I came home on January 31st, the door locks were changed. In New York City, if you live somewhere for more than 3 months and have proof of the person, cannot throw you out. But that evening, he had another plan. He had gone down to the police station and did a written report on me. As you know, there is always your story, their story, and the truth. Of course, he fabricated the story. He actually said, "I put the knife to his throat and cut him." He struggled with me and all. He lied, forgot to tell them I only threatened him. He went to pound me with his fist. I got away, threw the knife in the opposite direction, and that he lived and I lived together for 3 months after that act. The guy just laughed as I was taken away to jail, to be booked at central booking, and then bragged to everyone what a man he was for putting me in jail. And, of course, made me look bad. It didn't end there because there was no room at Rikers holding cell, so I was taken to this jail. Everything was just fine until the other prisoners came in. Some police officer just had an issue with me, I guess. I was too pretty, or maybe she was a racist. I really don't know, but she places a heroin addict in my cell. There were so many free cells so that I didn't have to be in the cell with her. She started yelling at me about why she was there, because she got caught with heroin and she had HIV and was going to die eventually anyway. Then she whips a razor from her mouth. I was like, "What's that?" She says, "I'll cut anyone who wants to give me any crap." So as soon as she fell asleep, I was out. I called one of the guards over and basically ratted. Listen, after I heard she had HIV, I was like, "Oh no." So the officer who didn't like me was reprimanded for placing that girl in with me because all the other girls had their own holding cell. She was pissed. I just said thank you and God bless you with a smile on my face. So now I'm in Rikers Island getting booked for a felony charge that happened 3 months before. The story that was told was a lie. I could have been the one cut with the razor coming out of that chick's mouth who had HIV, not to mention doing some time. I got a lawyer that gave me 6 months probation. Not to get in any trouble. The charge was taken down to a misdemeanor and taken off my record. I could have gone to trial, but my lawyer said there was so much going against me. His exact words, "Black judge who claims he is colorblind, black prosecutor, can't talk this morning, black prosecutor, and the man was black." He said, just said, "You're a smart lady, right?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Because of the racial issues, you have no choice but to plead guilty. Again, you have the power not to let your story end this way. Many women who get abused are victims. They say nothing. The law says if someone reports domestic abuse first, you can be the one that's arrested. If you do nothing to report the crime, you need to protect yourself from the people like I experienced." Now, This site is all about stories like this, all about stories like this. And even though this is not the worst story I've ever read, what happens here, Shell, from beginning to end, even though you and I've read stories and seen movies about young women who have been really, really thoroughly abused, really, really thoroughly violated, raped in some cases by their own husbands. But this story, nothing really, really terrible happens. And yet, this woman gets put through all the motions of being, of being a villain, of being the bad guy. And nobody listened. So what really happened to her? She got bullied. She got bullied from the get-go, from the man, from the system, from the lawyer, the public defender that they gave her. How many times do you suppose this happens? Now, evidently, she's pulled herself kind of out of the muck and mire. There's a picture of her posted, and she feels as though she is a survivor. Now, What do you think about this story?
Right,
and how many times
this,
do you...
You read the story, but what website are you talking about? What site are you talking about?
Oh, it's a... get back to it now.
As you're saying, there's multiple stories, not just this one.
Yeah, it's a site. My computer just reset itself for some reason. It's
okay.
A site.
Well, when you can, let us know what the name of the site is when you can, in case anybody.
It's called.
Follow up.
It's just it's a site about true stories of my life, and it doesn't really tell you. It's called A Domestic Memoir, True Stories of My Life. And she and some other ladies are just blogging. That's what it looks like. They're just going to this site and blogging and telling their stories.
Okay.
Shine the light on me, domestic violence. Memoirs of stories and stop the violence. Now, you know that because this month has been, well, October is anti-bully month. And our shows that you and I enjoy watching, Law & Order SUV, all on Sunday of this week, there was a marathon of SUV shows, Joe Biden, I think Donald Trump, two or three high-profile people were on with Marista Hardike, or however you say her name, Olivia,
yeah.
And talked about ending domestic violence, abuse, etc. So a lot of these things came up, and I got a lot of stories. This one was less horrible than some of them, but it still gets to the point where she really got cheated out of having any rights. Although she's okay, she didn't get hurt.
She's moved on from that relationship, I'm assuming?
Yes, she moved on from that relationship, and she feels as though, you know, she's involved in a church and everything now, which is an obvious link to people feeling supported, is involving themselves in a local church and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, even in some situations like that, and I know I'm going to get a lot of rolled eyes when I say this, but sometimes you have to be choosy about your church as well, or choosy about your what's the word I want, the people that are going to your church, the congregation.
All right, well, just because somebody at church doesn't mean that they're a good and holy person. It doesn't mean
mm-hmm.
that they, I mean, you know, the whole cliche about, you know, like the mafia hitmen were in church every Sunday. So, you know, just because somebody's attending church doesn't mean that they abide by the teachings of the church. You know, it's more familial for them. It's cultural. It's expected. And, you know, they do it for outward appearance and not for spiritual reasons. So just because somebody's attending church doesn't reflect on their character. If they participate in church and they participate in the teachings of the church, that's different. You know, and it's very easy to see if somebody does that just by how they live their life and the comments they make. You know, you can tell where a person's coming from. And there's a lot of spiritual people that don't attend churches. So, you know, you just have to listen to how people talk, how they conduct themselves, how they react in situations, and you can size them up. But she's very, very lucky that when she threatened him with the knife that he didn't take it from her and hurt her with it. Because
mm-hmm.
if he was that type of an individual to plot for months, living with her in a lie, pretending that he got over that situation and was okay, that means that he could have very easily snapped at any time and hurt her. So she's actually very lucky. I went through a similar situation with my ex where he hit me only once. He hit me while we were dating, believe it or not, before we actually got married, really hard. And he knocked me into a window. Thank God I didn't break the window and he didn't break my jaw, but he hit me really hard. And I lost my temper, just like she did, because I was not going to be in a relationship with a man that I was in fear of. And I reacted, and I punched him back in the chest with the side of my fist, because he was actually next to me, And I told him if he ever laid his hand on me again, he would never see me. And for the next 6 years, we ended up getting married. We lived together. He never did raise his hand to me again. Although one time he did, and I started laughing, and then he stopped because he didn't get fear from me. He got, like, indignation from me, like, what are you thinking? You're really going to hit me? And this was, like, 4 years into the marriage. But he kept it under wraps because he was more emotionally abusive than physically abusive, which can really tear you apart, you know. So it's I'm not diminishing emotional abuse, because he really, there was a time there for about a year that I was, that he did sort of overwhelm me, and I stopped associating with family, and I pulled away from my friends and stuff, until my sister made a comment one time about the fact that I had pulled away from everybody, and it clicked. What she said made sense to me, and I was looking at how he had orchestrated things over the last year to make me, you know, like, not to be convenient for me to have anything to do with my family and friends, and I started turning that around, and that's when our relationship really fell apart, when he lost that kind of control over me. But he was not as, although he was abusive verbally, and he was very violent with other people. I mean, he would get in fights all the time with guys. He wasn't the type of abuser to, like, I never feared that he would ever put me in the hospital. I never feared that he would ever come after me. And so I was lucky in that regard, because if he had been that type, where just a few degrees more violence in him, he might have killed me that one night that he snapped 4 years into our marriage, but he didn't. He stopped himself, you know. But there are guys out there that are like what my ex-husband was, but to a much, much higher degree. And they first of all, they lose the ability to control themselves. As far as I'm concerned, it's a mental illness. It's not normal to be that violent and not care if you injure another person. And in those moments, they don't care. And then they feel justified afterwards. So to me, this is a mental aberration. It's not normal to be able to injure somebody and then have no conscience about it afterwards and blame it on the other person like they made you do it to them. That's just nonsense. It's never okay to injure another person. It's certainly not okay to control someone with mental abuse either, okay? And that's why that type of situation usually goes on a lot longer, because people, you know, I wasn't walking around with bruises. I didn't have any broken bones. So you tend to tolerate emotional abuse much, much longer than physical abuse, because you almost feel foolish, like, you know, well, you know, how bad can it be? I'm getting up walking every day. I get to work every day, you know, and so it's harder to define abuse when it's only verbal, but that is abuse. It tears you down. It limits your ability to enjoy life. Anytime somebody restricts you from having a happy and fulfilling life, that's abuse. And that goes beyond bullying, although it's classified as bullying. It goes beyond bullying as far as I'm concerned, because it's not looking at you. It's trying to control you. It's a very aggressive way for one individual to treat another individual. And the caution there is that it can always flip into physical violence. If somebody has that aberration in how their brains work, I think there's a very fine line to slide over into physical violence. Now, my ex-husband, because I told you we've reconciled and we're friends now, and he found me 25 years after we got divorced, he did finally get a handle on that and stopped being violent. So he didn't really have it deep-seated in him, obviously. Otherwise, he never would have come to terms with it on his own. But years after we got divorced, he said he finally got a handle on that. And you could tell by just sitting and talking to him now that he's a much calmer, kinder person. But he took responsibility for a lot of what he did wrong. And that's the big difference between, like, my ex, who was emotionally abusive and at sometimes violent, but not with me, except for that one time. All right. And these guys who will beat their wives put them in the hospital, apologize, get them home, and then 6 months later do the same things to them. There's a different area there, and the main difference is they never take responsibility. They are always blaming other people for if things don't go right in their lives. It's never their fault. If they beat the wife, somehow she pushed them over the edge or she pissed them off, but it's always the wife's fault. It's never their fault for losing their temper, and they feel justified. And that's the one thing I have to say about my ex is that he never felt justified. He always felt really lousy when he would lose his temper because he broke things of ours and things like that. So, I can look at my life with him and then these stories, and there definitely is a difference. There's like that line you cross, and as far as I'm concerned, you have a severe mental illness, and you should never be in relationships when you're like that. And women who recognize that in the man should steer clear of them because their brains don't work right. They don't have the normal safety valves in the way their brain works that would prevent them from actually murdering somebody if they become that angry.
Well, see, I don't necessarily feel like that's something that has to be. But what as far as somebody not ever changing or getting control of their lives, a lot of things have extenuating circumstances, as we both know, and a lot of times people are in a bad place because of their life, things that have already happened to them in their life. But what I don't like about what happens in regard to women who are under this kind of duress is they get what I refer to as the maybe it's me syndrome. And then they never look at anything being right or wrong. They actually convince themselves that it might be their fault that they're being abused, that it might have something to do with their behavior or the way they are. And very sadly, that even happens with children. Children believe that they're such rotten kids because they've heard that so many times that they actually begin to believe that they deserve to be punished, beaten, abused, because they're not good kids. And that's what I think causes the most damage in all of these scenarios, to get smacked one time and stand up for it and say, "You're never doing that to me again, asshole," is one thing. But to have it be such a big part of your life on a constant, then you start believing that whoever your perpetrator is has a good reason for not doing it because you're not who you're supposed to be. And that's where I think most of the damage gets caused from. And then, of course, then you've got the people that have to get rid of all of that anger and go out and, do something to hurt somebody else because they're hurt so much themselves. Now, this woman rose above that, and she never felt like she deserved any of that, and she saved herself. You saved yourself because you have more self-esteem than that. But what about those people that don't? And what about those people who start experiencing that kind of abuse at such an early age that they don't have the facilities to be able to explain why somebody's being a jerk to them? They think it's them.
All right. And that is the biggest issue, is that for people, whether it be a spouse or a child that is the victim of abuse, is that in many cases, like you said, they get to the point where it is so demoralizing and so diminishing their true personality and character that they get to the point where they feel that somehow they've done something that deserves it, it's their fault, that they're bringing it on themselves. So the embarrassment, the fear, the suffering is something that becomes so private that, how do they even vocalize it? It's their fault. They're bringing it on themselves. So it's almost like live a dual life. They show one side of themselves outside, and then a lot of times people find out what they're going through inside their own four walls, and they're shocked. They would never think that this person would be living like that, It completely degrades the human personality when you are being controlled by another person. The bad thing about it is sometimes people don't recognize that. They don't recognize that the person that is the person that's abusing them is sick. There's something wrong with them. They believe somehow if they were just a little bit better or a little bit more responsible or a little bit more what this person wanted, that they wouldn't be so angry all the time, that somehow they have to alter their
right.
conduct in order to, so this person doesn't get so angry all the time, you know,
right.
Without realizing that, no, because every time you get a little bit better, it's never going to be good enough because they just want to be angry. There's something wrong with them, and if there's nothing wrong, they're going to invent something to be angry about because they just need to take that out on you. They've selected you as their safety valve and that you are going to be the one that's going to suffer even when you even haven't done anything wrong.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the biggest problem, of course, is that by the time somebody opens up and says, you know, I know it's me and I'm embarrassed to tell you this, but because I do this and because I do that, you know, my mom, my dad, my husband, my wife, you know, they take it out on me, you know, it's not their fault. And then the other thing, of course, is the love thing. it can be, love can be the most beautiful thing that happens to anybody. The natural love of a parent and a child, the love you find in someone as you reach that time of your life when you have feelings for someone other than mom and dad and your brothers and sisters and grandma and grandpa and all that kind of stuff, is being able to fit the mold that they think you should fit. And if you grew up in a household where you didn't have to fit anything, you actually were loved for who you were. When you meet somebody who wants to make you different, you usually fight against it. That's what happened to you. You knew better than to think that somebody could treat you like that. I mean, even though we both had issues growing up, I mean, because parents are not born parents, they're born kids. And it all depends on how they grow up as to what kind of parent they're going to be. But if they love you and treat you with unconditional love, then if you fall into a place of abuse like that, you recognize it. But what if you don't? That's the scary part. What if you don't grow up with the kind of love and support that you're supposed to have? And what if you think that because nobody's ever hugged you or loved you, that it's a normal existence to find somebody, have sex with them. That's the act of love, and the rest of the time it's just, you know, you do what I say, and that's the end of the game. There's people that live like that as well. And what bothers me is that there's no place for that person. First of all, they don't even know how to articulate the problem. You know, they don't know how to say, well, you know, something just isn't right to me. Does everybody, you know, get treated indifferently? Does everybody, because they don't know anything different. And that's where the real issues start growing. And sometimes we had somebody on our show who was a regular, and she spoke on the show on several occasions about health and wellness. And she shared a story with us that was heart-wrenching. She talked about abuse. She talked about standing after so many times just as retribution, being kicked out of their bed and landing on the floor, and when he fell asleep, standing over him and really considering taking his life. Do you remember that conversation?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
And it was chilling. It was chilling to hear somebody that we both know is kind and generous and really, you know, is immersed in a life that she wants to do good for others and everything. To hear her say those words, it was kind of chilling. But you
it
see,
is. It was chilling, absolutely.
Yeah, but she had enough of the good stuff in her life to be able to know the difference. And finally, you know, realized she didn't have to live that way. She didn't deserve to live that way, and so she changed things. But I guess what I worried the most about, I mean, I spent time a couple of years ago with a young girl. I knew her mother. I did many things to help her mother, but I did not have a lot of respect. But I did it because I thought I could maybe make a difference. I didn't make a difference, by the way. Maybe with a couple things, but not with all the things that were really important. So then I spent time with this child. And this child needs really, really a lot of care and attention. She was hurting herself. Her arms were covered with scars from cutting herself. She was hospitalized on several different occasions. And there was never any true wellness that came from any of the treatments. It was just like a shutdown time, you know, a time when nothing was done to hurt herself because she was under the scrutiny of other people and other people were monitoring her behavior, and she would be all right during that time. But the minute everybody thought she got a handle and she was released again, it would just go back to what it was. Why? Because she didn't know anything different. She really
right.
didn't know anything different. And conversations that would help somebody, I don't know, who has an inkling of understanding what it's supposed to be like, what life is supposed to give to you, what you are supposed to give back, then maybe some help could have been rendered. But there was no understanding of what would be normal. No understanding whatsoever.
Wow.
So I don't know where this person is now. I think about this person a lot. I will tell you I'm healthy enough to not feel responsible, but I do have, I don't know, I have mixed emotions about my interactions with this young person because I really did want to help, and I purely and simply was not equipped to help. I couldn't. Anything I said I could see was going nowhere. I mean, there was no, not even the littlest bit of understanding about some of the things I said. Why? Because it was all foreign. All foreign
exactly.
to her.
Exactly. And you I've know. Met people like that too throughout my life. I can go back and think, and there's one girl from high school that I still think about to this day, because I don't know if she ever ended up having an okay life. And we weren't that close friends. It was somebody that I watched, and she got abused a lot. And I'm wondering if the reason she got abused a lot is because she was abused at home. She was very backwards, very awkward. But, you know, I mean, I was a kid then. I didn't know then what I knew. I knew enough to be sympathetic to her, and
right.
I sort of kept people from messing with her because, you know, kids would make fun of her. She wore clothes that were, like, for someone 3 or 4 years younger than her. I never understood why her parents did that to her. I thought it was ridiculous that they would send her to school dressed like that, you know. And because of it, she got picked on. And, Oh, but she was very backward. So, you know, now looking back, I'm wondering what kind of parents she had. They must have been very backwards in you know, I mean, to send her to school like that, because her clothes were always clean, but they were age inappropriate. And it was for somebody much, much younger than her. And, it was like, you know, I just never understood it. But at the time, all I knew is that she was a sweet person. I saw her as somebody that couldn't defend herself. So I would, if the kids started picking on her, I would step in and I would make them stop, you know. But she never seemed to develop the ability to do it for herself, and I've always wondered whatever happened to her.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess probably I've met a few kids like that when we talk about being in school and meeting people like that. I guess I have a few stories like that, but not as recent as this one was, and I actually go back to the day that I took a hold of her arm and I rubbed my hand up her arm, and I could feel the tenseness in her body release. And I thought to myself, when that happened, I thought I could help, and I couldn't. And I spent time with her on social media, and she'd send me poems and stuff like that, and I tried to make a difference, and honestly, I did not. And I think about it a lot just because I wish that I had been able to do something. But it makes me know that in a lot of these stories that we read and a lot of the stories that we hear about, it's because of what becomes the norm. And that issue about believing after somebody tells you you're stupid so many times, Shell, you believe you're stupid. After somebody tells you so many times that you're ugly and nobody will ever care about you, you believe that you're ugly and no one will ever care about you. And, I mean, they proved that years ago in you know, turning people against themselves by drilling them with that kind of negative information. So if you grow up in a household where that's the norm and that's the way you live, you have no reason to doubt that it's true. So then you grow up and you move out on your own, and maybe things in the outside look normal. And that's a scary part of it, too. The ability that some people have, like this story last night, this woman that was actually abusing her whole family was an avid churchgoer in the local church. And that when somebody questioned anything, we're church people. We don't do things like that. And throughout the entire show, you hear her saying those words time and time again. We're church people. And I thought to myself, you know, under the guise of church, very sadly, a lot of bad things happen. And I have always believed that church should be more in your heart than on your lips. If it's not in your heart, it doesn't matter what you say with your mouth. So, you know, that's just a true fact. So what do we tell?
I'm just agreeing with what you're saying about the church goers. When somebody puts it out there too much, it lacks sincerity and in any sense of true spirituality. I was watching one of these judge shows once, and the woman, all she kept saying is, I'm a church-going Christian, and I would never lie, and blah, blah, blah. And she kept going on them, but she was obnoxious. And the judge finally looked at her, and he said, stop saying that, because I don't want to be here when the bolt of lightning comes down, because all you've done is lie in my face.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
But that's true. It's funny, but sad, because it's true. You know, and it is what it is. You know, Christianity is something that stems from your heart and from your soul and your being. It is not just about words and professing to be a God-fearing Christian. That's not what it's about. It means that you love others sometimes more than you love yourself. Not all the time, because that's not healthy either. But sometimes you put others before yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
For me, that's what Christianity is supposed to be about, and people who practice that are happier and healthier. But so what do we say to somebody that might be listening now or listen later to the show if they're immersed in something that has become their norm, because it's the way they grew up? It's what was always acceptable. How do we help them step out or off of that merry-go-round?
Well, first of all, it depends on what their particular situation is. First of all, they need to recognize that it's not their fault, and that they should be having a happy, fulfilling life. And if they're with somebody who's preventing them, that's wrong. It's just very simply wrong. If your happiness is being taken away from you by another individual because of how they treat you, if you're living in fear, if that person is constantly criticizing you and making you feel less of yourself, that's wrong and that you shouldn't be. So the first thing happens is the person has to be able to realize that that's not the right way for one person to treat another. And if they are, in fact, receiving that type of treatment from somebody, that person is wrong, not them. All right. Even if they do make mistakes, even if they do burn the toast, or even if they do, there's no reason for somebody to get so angry over minor mistakes that they would become abusive to another individual. And sometimes nervousness of being perfect around that person is sometimes what creates that environment for them to make the mistakes to begin with, because they're so nervous they're not paying attention to what they're doing. So it becomes a vicious cycle then, okay? The other thing is, depending on what the situation is, if it's becoming abusive, but you can take yourself out of that relationship and move out and move on, maybe go live with family or friends until you get yourself situated, that's always the best thing to do. But you have to have a clear understanding of the person you're with, because if the person is truly violent, if the person is the type of person that may seek you out and harm you, then you have to do things in a very thought-out way. You need to educate yourself, talk to some people, talk to the authorities, talk to maybe some family and friends to see if they can help you, because you hear of retaliation stories that the woman tries to leave the man. Sometimes it's the man trying to leave the women. I mean, there are women stalkers out there as well. But you have to really kind of be aware of who you have gotten into a relationship with. Is it somebody that's just making you unhappy, or is it somebody that could actually physically harm you, or that's already physically harmed you? So if it's somebody that's violent, then you have to handle it a little bit more carefully and a little bit more thought out. If you're in imminent danger, then you just have to take off. Leave your stuff, pack up a bag with a few things and get out of there as soon as you have the opportunity to, and just go somewhere and then figure the rest out. But if you have time to look into it, make sure that you're in a good place, then you need to talk to some trusted people who will then assist you in making that move to get away from this individual.
All right, so let's say there isn't any obvious anything that you could say to somebody. Let me think this through. What if you're in a situation like this young girl that I knew? Again, from a very, very early, early age, when opinions, the difference between right and wrong, the feeling of love versus hate, or not just hate but indifference, those feelings and those emotions were all just being realized, and there was nothing there then. There was really nothing there then. So then this young person has nothing to work with. So let's go, we're really out of time, but I want to say that if you're in a situation like that, some of the things that I know have helped young girls and young guys is writing. And we talk about this all the time. But putting your feelings on paper and being able to read your own feelings often bring you to the realization of what your feelings are and what is right and wrong. So writing in a journal, writing poetry, writing stories, things like that that take you to another place are beneficial for you if you are in the middle of a scenario like that. So we will recap this show tomorrow because there's still some things that we didn't share. But I want to wish everybody a great day. If you're living in South Florida, it looks like it's going to be a really, really rainy one, but cool and breezy. So have a good one, everybody. God bless. Thanks, Shel.
Thanks, Renee. Have a wonderful day, everyone, and we'll speak to you in the morning.
Bye-bye.